Hey, what's going on, everybody? It is Wednesday at 7:50 p.m. on April 24th. We have passed 420, and I'm sorry you didn't hear from me. It's not because I smoked. I did not smoke. One of my first 420s in a long time without smoking. I don't know. Maybe I did it a year or two ago. I'm not sure. But quite frankly, it was just because I was grinding. You know, I've been out and about, and I didn't prioritize the podcast. And that's just me being honest with you, because I know that you look forward to episodes, and I certainly do too. And the problem is, when I don't pump out episodes, that is when the old cravings start to creep in. If I'm not vigilant about my sobriety and taking active steps to fight against it, I begin to slide back. And so some of the warning signs when I find myself craving starts off with pornography use. So I interviewed for a job today. I took the rest of the day off. I didn't do so hot in the interview. We can talk about that in a little while, but ended up going down the pornography rabbit hole when I got home. My wife is gone for the next week. And this is really just a continuation of starting to read some erotic literature in the past, the past 4 days or so, 4 or 5 days. It's been a long streak. Like, I'm talking a long streak of not engaging in any of that content. And it just, when it comes to dope, for some reason, the one leads to the other. And I was talking about this with the pastor this evening. I went and met with the pastor of the church I've been attending locally here, asked him to be my mentor. In the first meeting we had, he really just kind of talked about sobriety and how important it is to be sober, and tried to show me Bible verses about it, and I appreciated it. I tried to have the attitude that he had something to teach me, right? I was not there to tell him what to do or what I wanted to talk about. I needed to listen, right? And then this time around, about halfway through, I did end up saying, hey, you know, if you're good on this topic, we were talking about something in Ezekiel, marriage and husbands and wives. I was like, do you mind if we pivot and talk a little bit more about career? But that first time, it was all about the marijuana use. And I told him, I was like, you know what, man, it's not so much that I can't put together a streak, right? And for some of us, we can't, right? In the beginning, I couldn't. I could not. When I first was quitting marijuana, I'm going to tell you straight up, one day was a big freaking day. Even half a day when I first started was a big day. So if you're in that camp, if you're one of the folks who are like, man, I've been smoking for 10 years. Man, I've been smoking for 2 years. Man, I've been smoking my whole life. How am I supposed to go even to lunchtime without burning? Well, set that goal, okay? Nobody says that you got to set the cold turkey rest of your life goal, okay? Even half a day of not smoking is better than what you had yesterday, which was smoking all day, right? Compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to who other people are today. You got champs out there like Jamie putting in over a year. And me, I'm probably at 5 or 6 weeks. I don't know, April 24th. Yeah, probably 6 weeks now. So 42 days, whatever, going to be approaching my longest streak. And then that, you know, that loser friend of mine who it's turning out not to be so much of a loser, he's almost at 6 months. And he smoked his whole life, smoked like a chimney, only the highest grade indica. I mean, this guy grew it. It was a blueberry. It was, I don't think it was blueberry kush or anything like that. It's just straight up called blueberry. A very potent indica. And he had an interesting way of growing it, too. So he would, after he did the seeds, after he germinated the seeds using the wet paper towel trick, right? You put that on the plate, put the two plates together, warm them up a little bit, let them sit there between the wet paper towel. And then the seed germinates, you put that in the little cup of, you know, the red Solo cup of potting soil. Once that thing would pop up, he'd turn the fan on him. And the fan would be running on them constantly. And that was an effort to strengthen the stem. And he would top the plant. And so it would end up having 8 colas instead of one big fat main cola, which is susceptible to mold and mildew in the latter part of its life, especially as the temperatures begin to drop at the end of the growing season. You'd have 8, and so you'd get a lot of bud, first of all, increases the yield, but also increases the likelihood that you're going to retain that yield. And even though we both loved hunting and fishing, I definitely hung out with him more because of the drugs. And, you know, I'd like to think it was because of the hunting and fishing, but there were times I would loiter or linger or go out of my way to see him in order to get high. not impressed with this guy in some respects, and one of my biggest downfalls as a person is thinking that I'm better than people, or that people aren't as good as me. And it's not a good trait to have, okay? It's narcissism, it's just not good. I don't know. There's probably 100 other words to describe it. I'm no better than anybody else. And I think that I'm starting to get there. I'm starting to look at people. My walk with Jesus Christ is helping me realize that God loves everybody. God loves this person. And because Jesus loves that person, I should love them too. It's helped my listening tremendously, because I was one of those people, when someone was talking, I'd just be waiting for them to stop so that I could say what I wanted to say. And sometimes I already knew what they were going to say. I knew the whole thing. I mean, I've been reading. I could read before I got to kindergarten. And I don't just mean like see Tom run. I mean, I could read. And so and my parents were super ultra conservative disciplinarians who never let us watch TV or go anywhere. And so my siblings and I, we would have to escape into books. I actually read the entire elementary school library. And when I got called into the principal's office for my behavior, he's like, well, we'll get you some books. I've read them all. And then I read almost the entire public library in my town. And so because of this, I had a lot of characters upon which to draw. And so in life, it was easy for me to predict people. It was easy for me to help people feel better. But I also did find some perverse pleasure in manipulating people at times. It was mostly due to boredom, right? Being trapped in the public school system, not being able to challenge myself. But it led to me not being a good listener. I think that was a main thing. I was not a good listener. But now having my eyes on Jesus more, trying to learn from this guy, trying to follow Jesus Christ, not David Goggins, not Cameron Haynes. I mean, those are inspirational people, but they're still just people. They're not the best people, right? This is the very best person who walked on planet Earth, that all religions acknowledge walked on planet Earth. Jesus called us to love one another. That was his second greatest commandment. The first one was to put, to believe in God, no other gods before me. And then his second greatest commandment was to love one another, to love thy neighbor. And so people have been coming to me lately and just yakking about shit I don't care about. You know how crummy their life is, how this person has wounded them, boo fucking who. But the thing is, I also sense a hurting person in there. And Jesus told me that, like, God loves this person. So that's my mantra now. When I'm listening to someone who's super boring, but like is obviously in distress, I just say, hey, Jesus loves this person. Jesus loves this person. Jesus loves this person. And I just look him in the eyes, and I try to just, like, exude that love. And it's really helped. It's helped me, right? Because now I'm not angry and depressed and frustrated. And hopefully it's helped my relationship-building skills, because now I know how to listen. This friend I was talking about, the smoker, he was a drug dealer. And one great thing about drug dealers is that they can frickin' listen. My buddy from college, the drug dealer, he had so many friends. Drug dealers have a ton of friends. And I don't think it's because of the drugs. I think it's because they're people, right? Because there are many people who deal drugs, but the really great drug dealers, right, the ones that everybody goes to, obviously their shit is good, but they're great listeners. They have people skills, right? When my friend is listening to me, it's crazy. He makes me feel like I'm freaking smart. I'm talking to him, and in the beginning, this is the narcissist in me, right? Like, I think he's listening to me because I'm smarter than him. Right? He doesn't think about this shit. Like, he's not as bright as me. He's not as erudite as I am. He's not as literate as I am. And while some of that may be true, and he is not as consumed with the news and media as I am, so he's unaware about some things, and so if I'm talking about that, he listens. But he also listens when I'm talking about my personal life. And he's older than I am, right? So to think that he's listening because, wow, he's going to, like, learn something that he can apply to his own life. It's like, first of all, he may have been through it already. And second of all, just his act of listening makes me feel more valuable. And so I'm trying to become a better listener. And I've had a few opportunities to do that recently. But anyway, let's go back. Let's pause for a second. Let's go back to the warning signs when you're about to smoke. For me, it's pornography use, and I think that dopamine hit and kind of taking, knowing that I'm doing something bad in order to get my dopamine, then leads to the next bad decision being okay to get my dopamine. Like, why is the porn okay but not the weed, right? Like, might as well go smoke some dope. Not usually the other way around for some reason. It's not usually like, oh, I'm going to smoke and then I'm going to look at porn. It's not really like that. But that's just me. Other warning sign. Thinking about it. Dwelling on it. Okay, when I'm hungry to be sober, when marijuana comes up, I literally tell myself in my head or out loud, I don't want that. It's bad for me. Okay, and there is a ton of psychological research that backs that up. Like, what you say is your reality. Like, positive self-talk really works. Unfortunately, I went through some trials and tribulations last week, and we'll get there. But I was talking to a friend about them, and he goes, oh, wow, man, I can't believe you. Man, have you been drinking or anything? I'd be sitting in the corner getting drunk. Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, no. No, I haven't. I've been waking up at 4:30, drinking my greens shake, letting the dog out, and then meditating for 10 minutes, reading the Bible, like a chapter or two of the Bible, then doing my back PT, then doing my yoga, then getting dressed up and ready to leave, and then leaving and going to school and being the first one in the parking lot. When I get home, I do yoga, and then I either go out for a 20-minute jog, or I shouldn't say 20-minute jog. I go out for a 2-mile jog. I know, no idea how long it takes. I'm not taking my watch with me. And so it's not 20 minutes. I'm not running a 10-minute mile. Or if it's a day I'm not jogging, I alternate with push-ups and pull-ups, right? And then before I go to bed, I read the Bible a little bit more. So I've built up this cushion. I've built up this resiliency. I've built up this sense of balance and stability that is allowing me to resist the waves, you know, the waves that have been coming at me. I also believe and have noticed, and now that as I'm getting older, or just as I'm getting more reflective, that life is a pendulum. Life is suffering. What goes up must come down, but what is down must come up. So nothing is permanent. When you're riding the high, when life is going great, just enjoy it and have peace and keep fighting your fight. Like, keep doing the right thing, because all of a sudden something bad's going to happen, right? And that doesn't have to sell your happiness short. It just gives you all the more reason to keep eating healthy, to keep training, to keep being fiscally responsible, because that way when shit happens, it's not as bad as it could be. And likewise, when things are down, when it seems like life just keeps punching you and punching you, giving you the hook, giving you the uppercut, it will change. Like, it will turn around. Something good will be coming down the pipe for you. So when my friend tells me this about already drinking in the corner, blah, 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 I'm like, no, I'm not. And then he goes, hey, well, what's new? And we're talking for a long time. He's like, oh, well, you've been listening to Joe Rogan? What's new on Rogan? I'm like, I haven't really been listening. I mean, sometimes he has a guest I'm interested in, but lately they just haven't scratched the itch for me. It hasn't been what I needed. You know, I'm listening to a lot of motivational stuff, and I don't really listen to him talking shop with his comedian buddies anymore because they celebrate the drugs and that promiscuous lifestyle. He's like, oh, okay, blah, 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 blah. Well, sure enough, the very next day on my way into work, what do I listen to? I listen to Joe Rogan. And who is he talking to? He's talking to some fighters. And what do they keep talking about interspersed in their conversation? Marijuana, right? And so now I'm like, oh, yeah, wait, marijuana's cool. Oh, successful people use marijuana. Oh, look at these famous badass folks who are smoking and getting high. And then I start thinking about it. I start dwelling on it. I start considering it. Well, maybe at this point in the school year, I'll take a toke. Or maybe when summer vacation comes, I'm going to take a toke. Or, ooh, I'm looking forward to, I'll stay sober until I go to the beach with my wife's family. And then like halfway through that, I'll just have a self-care day. And I'll take a joint and I'll go walk a mile away and I'll smoke the shit out of it. And I'll just lay there and freaking, you know, meditate on life. And so that is like the most dangerous thing you can do as an addict, is to start thinking of the day when you get to use. Because if that day is okay, then why not today? So that's another warning sign. Red flag. Red flag number one for me, pornography use. Chasing dopamine and stepping away from my morals and values. Red flag number two, dwelling on marijuana in my head, letting my mind fixate on the dope. And red flag number three, I don't know, it'd be cool to have three, right? But why do you always have to have three things? Those are my two. Those are my two big ones. Don't dwell on it, and don't start slacking in other areas, chasing that dopamine. So what has been going on? What's been going on in the life? Let me tell you, I spoke at the Board of Education meeting. I'm the note taker for our association, and I attend the board meetings anyway. I've been attending them for 5 years. That's where, you know, decisions happen, or so I thought. But at the very least, it is where the administration, specifically the superintendent, tells the board how things are going and what's going on. And by being there, I've gotten to hear all of the fucking crock of shit, all the bullshit that the superintendent has been spreading out, right? It's nonsense. A lot of it is complete and utter nonsense. It's inaccurate. It doesn't portray or represent the true attitudes or the true climate in the buildings. Just nuts. So anyway, board meeting's coming up, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, what am I going to say? Public comments coming up. You know, I'm trying to get into this public speaking space. What can I talk about? Well, I'll just talk about something that's, you know, near and dear to my heart, something that I think is important. Oh, how about curriculum? Yeah, you know, oh yeah, we're using this scripted curriculum where kids have to read The Little Red Hen 6 days in a row. And then after that, they have to read The Three Little Pigs 5 days in a row. And then after that, it's The Little House for 8 days in a row. And it's boring and fucking awful, right? And teachers are still afraid of administration, you know, of going off the script. Now, what's so bizarre is we've got a lot of teachers going on this website called Teachers Pay Teachers, where, you know, you can be Joe Teacher and you can come up with a cool lesson or a cool activity. You upload the files and then somebody can come pay you $5 or $2 or 50 cents, whatever you decide to charge, pay you for it, download it, and then boom, they didn't have to do all that work. You did the work for them. It's a cool little thing. Well, this curriculum that we're using, I'll just tell you, it's called Wit and Wisdom. It's being adopted all over the country under the guise of the science of reading. Therefore, there are teachers who are starting to upload, you know, more kid-friendly versions of the worksheets, kid-friendly versions of the activities. And so a lot of teams have just bought those. And so it's nuts because our school district had actually banned, we put Teachers Pay Teachers on a firewall so that teachers couldn't access it in school. And yet now we have entire grade levels printing out these modules and using them from Teachers Pay Teachers. It's bizarre. It blows my freaking brain. My own grade level is finally heading that direction because we have a new teacher on our team who last year was on a team that used all of this kind of stuff. So, are teachers truly afraid to go off script? I thought they were. I think there's a lot of fear in the building. I think that if our director of curriculum instruction, who's an administrator and who is like the sneaky witch, the little mole for the superintendent, if she walked into your classroom and saw you teaching something totally different than Wit and Wisdom, most teachers, their panties be hitting the floor. You know what I'm saying? Like, whoo, it'd be that cold ice cube kind of going down your back, wondering what the fuck's going to happen. And you better have a real good reason about why you were doing it. I know that's the case for my team, or I thought it was at least. My team, you know, scared of doing something different. And I've been beating on that door with a sledgehammer for the past 3 years that we've had the curriculum. And, you know, they're older teachers, very fearful teachers. And so of all the teams in our building, at least, my team is the slowest to change. So I think, yeah, I'll go advocate for the kids. I'll go advocate for the teachers, right? Like, hey, if a teacher can write an engaging lesson plan and it's tied to state standards, that's what we're paid to do. So I go nuts, guys. I go up to the die cutter, which is this, I'm talking old school. It's basically two pieces of wood stacked on top of each other with a big lever. And when the lever goes up, the pieces of wood separate. And when the lever goes down, the wood squishes together. Now, inside of the top piece of wood is like some foam. I shouldn't say inside. On the wood is a piece of black foam, It's on the top wood, it's on the bottom wood. But what you'll do is you'll take a block, also made of wood, also with black foam. However, this block inside of it has like a cookie cutter. And so you slide it in between those two, you open up the lever, you slide your block in, you close the lever, and those two pieces of wood, top and bottom, come together and squish the middle one. And all that foam squishes flat, and the cookie cutter pushes down. Now, if you put construction paper in there underneath your block of choice, the cookie cutter squishes out the shape, or the letter, or whatever, whatever it is. And so I do a bunch of different shapes. I do crayfish, I grab a couple, I do a bear, I do some frogs, I do a kite, I just random shit, just shit that really, you know, big charismatic things, right, that are easy to identify. And I do them in all different colors. The crayfish are all red, the frogs are all green, the baby's feet are all blue, that kind of shit. And I cut a bunch out. And so when I go to speak for my 3 minutes, I'm like, hey, 3 minutes, put me on the clock. I pass out these shapes, one group of shapes, to each board member. And then I start talking about how great diversity is. And we all know diversity is great. We swap ideas and past experiences. And, oh, it's just so wonderful. You know, please exchange one of your shapes with somebody sitting next to you. And so they exchange a shape. And then I'm like, whoa, you know, and with teachers and people of different educational backgrounds, you know, my background's in environmental biology, but if I was talking to somebody who has a background in accounting, you know, I'm learning from them, they're learning from me. We're exchanging vocabulary. We're exchanging, and that's knowledge, right? Vocabulary is a currency. And that's really great. So trade another shape. So they trade another shape. I'm like, wow, now look at this pile of shapes. Look how enriched your life has been through this diversity. And so then I go on, and I go, I understand why we had to buy commercial curriculum out of the box, you know, teachers, and I apologize because teachers were not writing lesson plans that an administrator could just walk in and say, what are you teaching today, and here would be the lesson plan. The lesson plans weren't always tied to the state standards, and there were not standardized assessments at the end of the grade or halfway through the grade to say, yep, our kids learning what they need to learn. Oh, nope, so-and-so. You know, in this class, it seemed like kids struggled with variables in math, so what was teacher B doing that her kids really got it, that teacher C could adopt as a best practice, and now her kids would really get it? That wasn't happening, so I understand why you had to buy the commercial curriculum. However, and this is where I hold up my piece of paper and I show about how the books are so repetitive, I said, it would be really nice. I said, it would be nice if we heard a message from the top. And if we heard a message from the top, they said it's okay for teachers to go off script on those days when it's extra repetitive if they have a really good lesson idea that would teach the same skill but maybe use a different book. And I said, my own principal has encouraged us, and I understand the director of curriculum instruction. You know, her hands are kind of tied. She kind of wants us to do the curriculum, has to. It's her job. I said, but teachers are still scared, and so it would be nice if we heard a message from the top. Thank you. And I go sit down. Well, I send a text to the assistant principal saying, hey, how'd it go? He sends me one back, and I don't even, my phone is somewhere right now. But the long and the short, he's like, what were you trying to say? I said, teachers need to have, you know, it should be okay that they could have more flexibility when the lessons get repetitive. He goes, well, that's not how it came off at all. You know, I think the presentation was highly inappropriate, and I found it personally offensive. What? Are you kidding me? So now I'm freaking out, right? I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I, you know, maybe I blacked out while I was up there. Maybe I didn't say what I really thought I said. So when the meeting's over, I go over and I ask one of the, I'm like, hey, was I clear when I spoke? And she's like, oh yeah, you know, I wasn't confused. Then I went up to another board member. Hey, did you understand what I said? And he pulls me aside and goes, yes, you know, I think it's an important message, and I'm really glad you said it. Someone needed to say it. So now I'm patting myself on the back. I'm like, yeah, sweet. And then a member of the public comes up to me, this little old lady who can't hear at all. She's like, well, I didn't hear everything you said, but I'm really glad you said it. Okay, well, great. Cool. So I'm feeling way better. Now, you know, with administration, that the shoe's going to drop, right? Like, they are all in the CYA game. So the next day, nothing happens. The next day, I get an email. Hey, we'd like to call you in for a meeting, my principal. You know, since me and this assistant principal have such a good relationship with you, we'd like to talk about your comments at the Board of Ed. So I reply and say, well, is this a disciplinary meeting or is this a professional discussion? They cancel the meeting. Then I get an email from the superintendent. Hey, I'd like to meet with you regarding your comments to the Board of Education. You're entitled to bring a representative, and you're encouraged to bring a representative, but it's not necessary. We'll see you on Monday. Woo! Okay, so now at this point, you know, it's getting serious. And I'm a little, you know, I'm nervous. I'm apprehensive, right? Like, fuck, I know I rocked the boat here. And also, by this point on Friday, I realized I didn't follow the chain of command, right? Like, if I really felt that way, I should have gone to the superintendent first and then gone to the Board of Education, right? So even though my content may have been good, I didn't do it right. I didn't go about it the right way. So I'm feeling like dog shit. I'm texting my AP guy. I'm like, dude, I'm sorry if this came back on you, if it blew back on you badly. You know, I'm not trying to make life stressful for you. I apologize to my principal. I was like, hey, listen, I'm sorry if my words caused you more stress than you otherwise would have had. You know, I thought by giving you props that it wouldn't be a big deal. And she just smiled and was like, you know, thanks. I think she was genuine. She seemed thankful I said that. I even texted the superintendent. I'm like, listen, man, I had just sent you this letter about, you know, wishing you could be my mentor, blah, 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 blah. I was like, I still feel that way. If you want to just have a closed door meeting with no reps, like, that's fine with me. We'll go no reps and you just, you know, you can talk to me. He didn't text me back, and that's fine. I got it all out there. I was feeling better. Monday comes, I'm driving into work, and my car starts to clunk. Clunkety clunk clunk. Finally, it's going all the way up through my steering wheel. So I got to pull over. I'm freaking out, right? I'm supposed to be there. I got my meeting at 9:30. And I'm not even at work. I'm stranded on the side of the road. So I call the AP. He's 5 minutes behind me. He picks me up. He gets me into work. How am I going to get up there? I don't know. Sending emails, this, that, and the other thing. A custodian ends up getting a company car, drives me down, and takes me to the district office. I go in. I have the meeting. It's very cordial. It's my rep, the old guy who teaches that alternative program, my principal, the superintendent's secretary, and the superintendent. And she's scribbling away, and he's hysterical because he keeps saying, this isn't a disciplinary, you know, you're not in trouble, I'm not taking any notes. And it's like, yeah, you're not. The lady next to you is writing frantically at like 90 miles an hour. She's the one who's taking notes. So anyway, basically, he was like, dude, we're just trying to help you. Like, what you did, you didn't follow the chain of command. You got to come to me first. The board, they met in executive session. We had to talk about it for 40 minutes, this, that, and the other thing. You know, you're making us lose faith in you. You know, we're trying to support you. We're trying to get you into new things. And then you do this. It's like a slap in the face, blah, 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 blah. Well, at this point, I know my role, right? Like, I'm in there to eat humble pie. Like, if I go in there arrogant, if I go in there like, well, I believe in what I said and it's important, blah, 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 like, it's not going to go well, right? I said what I said, mission accomplished. Now we're on damage control. I don't want a disciplinary letter in my file, and I certainly don't want to be fired. So I'm just like, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir. Like, if I can do it over, I'd do it differently. You know, I'm going to put a safeguard in. I'm going to talk to you or our union association before I ever speak again. And, okay, well, you know, end of the meeting. Well, it was rough. It was rough. And I'll tell you what I learned. Number one, I learned about the chain of command, right? And it's one thing to know it cognitively, and then it's another thing to completely understand it experientially. Okay, cool. So now I've experienced it experientially. Number two, I learned you can't trust people. And you all know this. If you've been working somewhere for more than 10 years, you're probably on the other end of this going, duh, you can't trust people, man. They'll all stab on you. It's Game of Thrones. Like, blah, 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 blah. Well, come to find out, my team over the weekend emailed the superintendent and were quite agitated about what I said and were quite angry at me for saying it and said some, I didn't read it, but said some fairly nasty things and basically threw me under the bus. They didn't tell me that they wrote this email, right? They could have at least had the courtesy of shooting me a text and be like, yo, Jake, you used our names at the meeting, and I said my name, whatever. You used your names at the meeting, at our names at the meeting. You shouldn't have done that. We sent the superintendent a message to let him know that we don't feel the same way you do. I just wanted you to know. Okay, cool. Like, that would be a professional courtesy, right? And that's what a friend would do, right? I've been working with these people for 5 years now. But they didn't. And so the superintendent had said, oh, you might want to apologize, you know, because those teachers have been teaching here for a long time, and there are some real heavy hitters. It's like, okay, these are these are not heavy hitters, quote unquote, but they have been teaching here a long time. So I go in, I'm like, hey, you know, I heard that, you know, you messaged the superintendent. I just wanted to, you know, ask you about it, tell you how sorry I am, you know, they say their bit, and it's just like, wow. You know, the people I've been working with the longest, people I've drank with, people I've met outside of school, people who feel the same way I do about so many things, but now when push comes to shove, and I literally use their names as a, now I'm teaching the same thing that teacher A is teaching, the same thing that teacher B is teaching in the exact same way, right? Like, there's no diversity there across our grade level. I'm really good at science and athletics. This other teacher is really good at art. But yet we're both teaching the same curriculum the exact same way, right? That was the context. It was just fear, right? Like, they heard their names mentioned. They knew I was going to have a bullseye on my back. They were just scared. And then while I'm having these conversations, and then so I'm talking to a colleague about it, kind of my what I thought was my best friend there. And she's hammering me about sixth grade and about me possibly moving. Now, I had told one other person I might be going to sixth grade, and I wasn't supposed to tell anybody, but we were having an intimate conversation. She was sharing a lot of details, and then I, with my dumb ass, I was like, yeah, in administration, they're dangling this carrot over my head, la, 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 la. And then there was this, like, very pregnant, awkward pause, right? Like, well, if I'm trusting you, why aren't you trusting me type of pause, you know? And I knew how it looked. I knew how it came off. And I'm a truster, right? Wearing my heart on my sleeve. If you're my friend, I will die for you. I will fight for you. Like, I will walk away from my job. I will threaten to resign for you if you're my friend. Like, I will. And so I tell her, I say, yeah, you know, they said they might move me to sixth grade. And she's like, oh, that'd be so great. Oh, that's gonna be such a good fit for you. Oh, my gosh, I'm so excited. I said, but you can't tell anybody. You know, they don't, oh, I won't. Well, there's no reason why this other teacher, every time the talk of me teaching on the older grade, would keep going, like sixth, and then like nod her head and like stare at me and like sixth grade, ooh, and then stare at me like, hey, you should tell me that you're going into sixth grade. You told that other teacher, why aren't you telling me? Like, I've known you way longer, you know, we've shared broke bread together, you know, you share all the other stuff with me, why aren't you telling me? And I didn't, right? Because I was told not to tell. But anyway, so it was the twofer there. I got stabbed in the back by my own team. The association, the union president, didn't have any support for me at all. And then my colleague down the hall, you know, poor girl, she got the shaft because this other lady who I thought was in my corner and we've talked about a lot of stuff and have the same heart for kids, you know, she shared a detail that I specifically asked her not to share. So it's hard for me. And I think it's just going to be part of growing up, right? Is people are colleagues, not your friends. And it's just not really the kind of place I want to live in or work in, but that's how it is. And it could be because of the demographics. It was a lot easier when I was in a completely male-dominated space. I mean, I'm sure the same kind of backstabbing and whatnot happens in male. I know it does, but maybe because we all communicate the same way, right? And we share the same hormones and everything. Like, I don't know. It was just a much clearer path to negotiate. Whereas I'm working now with women who are, you know, 45 to 55 to 60, a little trickier, you know, a little trickier. And I'm a little lonelier, right? So those are my big takeaways. Okay, wow. And then, so I'm at this low. Car's dead, costing me $1,000 to get it fixed. You know, got to go do respite care now to try to pay for it. And all of a sudden I get a call back for a physical education job. What? Crazy. Nuts. So now I'm riding the high, right? Well, I don't really prepare a lot. I don't really know how to prepare. You know, it's like I prepared the last time around. It didn't do me any good. I got called. She called me, and she goes, it's tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Okay. Great. And so I end up staying late to make sub plans, and then another teacher comes in. And I have to do the whole listening thing. Jesus loves this lady. So I don't get home till like 7 o'clock. Well, I show up for the interview the next day. And I call her. I'm like, hey, what door do I go in? The district office lady. And she goes, oh, it's tomorrow. I'm like, what? She's like, oh, you didn't get my voicemail? I called you back. It's actually tomorrow. I'm like, no, I didn't get your voicemail. She's like, are you going to be able to make it? I'm like, yeah, I guess I'll have to. So I fly home, get my ID, because I'm ready to go to work. I'm dressed up fancy, but I don't have my ID. So I fly home, I get my ID, I fly to school, teach all day, and now here I am. It's the day I had my interview. And unfortunately, I didn't learn my lesson from the last time. The last time, they asked me, like, what's your dream program? Like, what's your dream curriculum? How would you teach phys ed? Like, how would you want it to be taught? And I answered with a bunch of vagaries. You know, nothing specific at all. It was just like, oh, I want to incorporate, outdoor recreation. I want to incorporate high adventure. I want to incorporate fitness. And I want to make sure that we're also doing some tactics and some games with strategy. But no specific, like, we're going to have kids learn about posture and lower cross syndrome before they leave elementary school. And students are going to self-identify three either sports or recreational activities that they're into so that by the time they're in high school, they can begin to really hone in and develop those. And I want kids every year to go through a running unit, a wrestling unit, a swimming unit, a basketball unit, a Wim Hof breathing unit. Like, I did not lay out any specifics. And it's just, it was so dumb. And then the other one was like, how are you going to assess the standards? And it's like, okay, these standards are very vague. So, sorry, if you hear cars going by, open up the windows because I got a chicken carcass boiling and the house was filled with steam. So I dropped the ball, and I got called in there because I sent a pretty funny video in. You had to do a two-minute video with your resume about why you'd be a good fit for the school district. And I went nuts. I put on my ghillie suit, and I stuck a raisin over my tooth like I was a toothless fucking redneck. And when the video started, I was like shaking my laptop, and I'm like, is this devil box on? Is it working? And I had my wife go, if you can see yourself, it's working. Oh, okay. I had my bow and my fishing pole. And I'm like, well, I really like hunting and fishing, and I think I can get kids to love the great outdoors. And then she goes, oh, why aren't y'all dressed up? This is for an interview. I said, well, this is my best suit. I killed a turkey in this suit just last year. And so I walk off camera, and I strip it off, and I got my, you know, my bow tie and my blazer on underneath it. I come back, I'm like, hello, I'm so-and-so, and I'm applying to be a physical education teacher at your school. And so when I show up today, the guy who met me at the door was like, dude, killer video. He's like, all the admins, we all came in and watched it multiple times. So good, he said, so good. So mission accomplished, right? Like, the video was to get me in the door because I don't have all of my PE certs, and I didn't graduate from a PE program. But then I got in the door, and I fumbled the ball. So That's how it goes. Then I got home and I looked at pornography. Also not very good. So am I doing a lot of things right in my life? Yes, I am. Am I still making some mistakes? Also, yes, I am. But today, I am still sober. And I hope you are too. So we got a quote for you. It's George Lorimer. He's just some journalist. Probably a great guy. I don't know. But I just like how this sounds. You've got to get up every morning with determination if you're going to go to bed with satisfaction. And we didn't read any. Okay, well, let's just do a quick reading here before we call it. John chapter 15, verse 1. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes it, so that it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, so neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him, he bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away as a branch and dries up. And they gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If you abide in me, and my word abides in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. Just as the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, so that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be made full. This is my commandment, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends, if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you slaves, for the slave does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you, and appointed you that you would go and bear fruit, and that your fruit would remain, so that whatever you ask of the Father in my name, he may give to you. This I command you, that you love one another. I'm just going to reread number 16 again, because it's okay to ask for blessings. It's okay to ask God for great things, because when your fruit is visible to the world, God is glorified. Like, to God be the glory. Like, you chose to live a sober life. Like, you chose to go to church. You chose to read the Bible. You chose to pray. You chose to abstain from these worldly evils. And good things are happening to you. You're a light. You're a fruit. And so I'm going to reread number 16. You did not choose me, but I chose you, and appointed you that you would go and bear fruit, and that your fruit would remain, so that whatever you ask of the Father in my name, he may give to you. Hey, remember to find satisfaction in the struggle and peace in the moment. We'll see you next time.